WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. I am Jason Mann, and joining me today is a first-time guest, Alex Torres. Alex, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I am doing very well, and glad to have you on the show. Today, we are going to talk about the main events of Destination X 2011. It is AJ Styles against Christopher Daniels. And kind of the point of this pay-per-view was to bring back the X division, which had for the past couple of years sort of been sidelined, especially when Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan were brought in the beginning of 2010. So the whole thing was to give the X division a big night and let them kind of do the spotlight. And Daniels, and particularly Styles, who had been with TNA from the beginning and had a lot of classic matches together. So this was kind of almost a summary of like an 8-year story between them.
Yeah, it kind of felt like Styles and Daniels was the only thing they could have had main event that show, because if there's something that defined the X division for a long time, it was Styles, Daniels, and, well, for after a while, Samoa Joe, too, but that's beside the point. And I remember one time on the back of the Best of the X Division 2 DVD, they made a big point of saying that the X Division is more than Styles, Daniels, Joe, so they deliberately left their matches off the thing because we've all already seen them.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of wondering, like, it seemed like the most famous of the X Division matches and rivals had Joe in there, so I kind of thought it was interesting that Styles and Dan, it wasn't the three-way, that it was just the one-on-one singles match. But, you know, as they go through the match and they kind of explain the relationship between Styles and Daniels, I did think, okay, this is more fitting. Plus, there you can more easily tell a story in a one-on-one match as opposed to a three-way match.
Now, see, I thought it was interesting, too, particularly because when this match was announced, Samoa Joe had come out first, and it was pretty clear he had come out to challenge AJ Styles. And then Daniels came out and started talking about how the match that should main event the show is the match that defines the X division, and then he sort of deliberately left Samoa Joe out.
Mm-hmm.
And while this was never capitalized off, they just kind of used it as some fuel for the match with Kazarian. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of, I guess it kind of shows that how Samoa Joe's position in TNA has changed in, you know, like the last 5 years.
Yeah, I think when you look at Samoa Joe and you consider the undefeated streak and the guy who was running roughshod over TNA, and then you see the guy he is now, and he's kind of losing all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, his matches don't have the same punch they used to. I mean, he's slowed down a bit. He's, you know, not doing some of the riskier, some of the more, aggressive bumps that he used to, which is probably good for him and maybe, you know, preserving his longevity. But it definitely doesn't have that same aura. It kind of reminds me of Vader in, you know, you look at like early 90s Vader versus late 90s Vader. And Vader just kind of at some point lost that big aura of being that really tough, big, strong, stiff guy. I think there's some parallels there.
I think with Joe, the most interesting thing is, like, when they care enough about him, he shows a bit of that fire again. I remember about last year, one of my favorite matches on a pay-per-view was AJ Styles and Kazarian versus Samoa Joe and Rob Terry. And you've seen Rob Terry before, I'm sure. And sure. Rob Terry's not someone I would ever think to say this match he was in was my favorite, but it just showed a lot of that oomph in Joe that he seems to be missing. And I think he's showing the same thing with this tag run with Magnus. He seems to care more. Mm-hmm. So I think it's sort of a correlation between when they stopped caring, he stopped caring.
Okay.
So he's just sort of phoning it in.
Yeah. And it's kind of understandable. I mean, if you're in a job where maybe your skills aren't appreciated, or where you were kind of the hotshot for a while and someone else is kind of the favorite of management, it's kind of understandable how someone might go through the motions, especially in something that's physically demanding as professional wrestling. I mean, it's easy to kind of get burnt out after a certain amount of time of doing it. I mean, you know, and maybe you're still pretty good, and maybe once in a while you're going to still kind of be the great that you were, but sometimes you just aren't really feeling it.
Right. And I would completely understand if that was his case. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's only human. You know, we are. Everyone has moments where they work harder. Everyone has moments where they, you know, take it easy. Unless you're just like an insane person. But most people are not insane people. So,
if you think there's no reason for you to work hard, you're not going to work hard.
And yeah,
that, I that can't too. Speak for him, but that's probably how he's feeling.
It certainly is a possibility. So, anyway, to get a little bit into the match. I like the commentary team here of Mike Tenay and Jeremy Borash. I think Borash is a really good choice here to kind of bring out a lot of the past stuff between Styles and Daniels, since Borash has been with the company forever, and you know, Taz is a more recent addition to the company, and Taz kind of treats these things a little silly, it seems, sometimes. So I think Borash is a really nice addition here.
Yeah, for me, you're completely right on that. Jeremy Borash has been around the whole time, I believe. If he wasn't around since the beginning, he's been around for long enough that it might as well be the beginning.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was there in the beginning, so.
So he would have seen everything, whereas Taz came in about 2009, and...
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that Taz doesn't really pay attention to anything that, like, happens outside of the 2 hours that he's watching, you know, and also probably forgets 90% of it for, like, a minute after it's done.
I think as soon as it's gone, it's gone, and he doesn't always have enough to say about it when it's actually happening in front of his face. I can't imagine him summing up what's been going on between them since, what, 2003, 2004?
Yeah.
How long Styles and Daniels have wrestled for?
Right, right. I mean, even before then, you know, in... because they both were in WCW at the end in 01, and they wrestled in, you know, I'm sure wrestled in the indies a bunch as well. I don't know, you know, exactly when their first match was, but, you know, I mean, they feuded in, you know, they had matches in ROH, I'm sure, and have had, you know, I mean, not just in TNA, but they've had enough in TNA. And obviously Styles is in many ways Mr. TNA. So, you know, they really have had, I mean, you know, they've wrestled all over the world together practically.
Right, and I mean, it's more than that. It's almost as if the Styles-Daniels dynamic, whether against each other or with each other, defined TNA as a whole.
Yeah.
In 2005, the biggest feud was them two for about half the year, and the other half of the year, it was them two and Samoa Joe.
Right, right, yeah, and that was kind of probably the creative peak of TNA as far as when they were having, you know, the mind-blowing pay-per-views were up and
right.
down, everything was pretty great, and they were showing more state-of-the-art wrestling and, you know, all that kind of thing. I mean, they really, that was, you know, 04, 05, maybe some into 06 was kind of, you know, is regarded as, you know, the best years that TNA ever had.
And, like, with 2005, if I asked you who the champ was, the world heavyweight champ, I'm sure that might not come as easily. Whereas if I had asked who was the X Division champ, most people would know, Christopher Daniels was champ for this amount of time, then AJ, and then Joe got it toward the end of the year.
Sure.
And then in 2006, when they sort of phased out of the X Division, and that's when their tag team division was on fire, when they had those matches with LAX.
Well, yeah, I mean, you might know, and what was going on in the 2005 main event scene with Jeff Jarrett. I mean, that was ne not nearly as interesting as what was going on with the X Division. And the I mean, Joe Styles and Daniels main event or pay per view. So I mean, it was some of their hottest stuff. I mean, they even recognized it at the time. So that was, good on them. And unfortunately, they kind of changed that philosophy, I guess probably later in 06 into 07 when they brought back Russo and kind of made it more, less wrestling oriented, more silliness oriented.
And I think at the same time, they had this idea that if they were really good, then they must not belong in the X division because they seemed to phase them out toward like the tag division and the heavyweight division. That was around the time that Styles went back to the heavyweight division. He was out in and out of it. Daniels went there, Joe went there.
And that's kind of a natural thing. I mean, that happened with the cruiserweights too in WCW. It's like, okay, well, you kind of get pigeonholed in this division. I know the X division isn't really a weight thing, but it essentially is kind of an evolution from the WCW cruiserweight division. But the guys who were the mainstays in that division, I mean, Mysterio, Jericho, Chris Benoit, I mean, they all eventually moved their way up to the heavyweights and, primarily did that. If they were wrestling with the cruiserweights, it was usually kind of considered a step down reputation, which is unfortunate that we have that reputation because, I think if properly developed, I think cruiserweight wrestling could kind of be a marketable thing and could be something like on its own that would be both artistically wonderful and something that could, draw money for the right wrestling company. But obviously, there aren't really promoters, at least on the major level, that have that mindset.
They don't treat them like they're weight divisions. They treat them like this is like your practice division, and the place you want to be is the heavyweight division. Heavyweight is really now just a title. Not everyone who wrestles in the he for the heavyweight title is an actual heavyweight.
I mean, the word heavyweight really doesn't mean anything. It just happens. It's just tradition that they call it that. But yeah. So, one thing I will say about Mike Tenay, and maybe people have his their opinions on whether he is a good commentator or not. But one thing I think that we all are meant to do certain things in this world, and Mike Tenay is meant to read statistics before matches. Like that is what he is meant to do. Like he is meant to, tell us how many times AJ Styles has been X Division champion, which is 6 times. He's meant to tell us that the longest reign of any X Division champ is 5 months, which kind of blows me away. Only 5 months for that to be, which I guess is just the era that we live in, but still. And he this is what he is meant to do. I've noticed this in WCW pay-per-views I've watched, and I'm sure I haven't really watched that many main events for TNA yet, but eventually as I go through those, I'm sure that will be something that I notice. That is something that Mike Tenay is meant to do.
Encyclopedia-esque. That is pretty much what Mike Tenay is. He retains it, and then he just gives it all to you in the tail of the tape.
Yes, he does. Indeed. So, that's fine. I like Tenay for that. I'm less about him as the. I mean, he can do play-by-play fine, but I'm less about him trying to sell me on the emotions of things. But if I want, someone to explain the background and someone to kind of get into the history of something, Mike Tenay's my man.
He can't sell me on the emotion because I barely feel it from him. He doesn't seem like the type that can get too angry about something or too passionate about something.
Yeah, he's not great at conveying that. When he does, it just kind of comes off as a little bit contrived and phony. I just think it's just like I know that Mike Tenay cares a lot about wrestling, and I know that like he works
Oh, I'm
hard.
not saying he doesn't.
He absolutely does. It's just he doesn't have that voice or that, he's obviously just not on the level of the greats who can do that. And we've been lucky to, Jim Ross obviously coming to mind as one of the very best. But I mean, he's adequate at what he does. But yeah, he just doesn't have, isn't able to bring like that emotion into it, through his announcing. So we have one of the stories is we have in-ring win intros here, which I always kind of like that to add some importance to it. Christy Hemme does them. We're back in the six-sided ring. We bring it back for one night after they took it away at the beginning of 2010, which people were up in arms about. Are you a fan of the six-sided ring, or do you not really care, or what's your opinions on that?
With the six-sided ring, I can understand why they wanted to go to the four-sided ring, but the six-sided ring allowed more. It allowed more for the X Division, and I think that was a big part of why they were able to shine so much, because I've heard things about the ropes getting more, being better to jump off of when it's the six-sided ring as opposed to the four-sided. Mm-hmm. I can't say that for a fact. I've never tried them, sure. But I've heard it.
Okay. One thing I noticed during this match is they seemed like they had very, very little room on the outside, like when they were doing the dives and stuff. It seemed like it was very close to ringside, it was very close to the barriers. And I'm not sure if that was just, if I recall, most other six-sided ring, there was more space there. I don't know if they just, because they weren't used to it, they set it up close or, you know, whatever that would be. I don't know if you noticed that or not.
I didn't really notice that, but it would make sense if they're just not used to it. It probably is a different six-sided ring, too.
Okay.
I doubt they found the same one a year and a half after they stopped using it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, they were in the impact zone, right? I mean, I imagine they would have it just, you know, they would have some sort of garage or some sort of storage area where they might have kept it. I mean, I don't think they would have gotten rid of it.
I don't know.
I'm not sure. Interesting question, but... So anyway, another thing on the background of the story is that apparently AJ and Christopher, they named their children after each other. I mean, that kind of building like the closeness of this relationship between them. They, of course, were both members of Fortune at this point.
Right.
We begin with a pretty lengthy chain wrestling. Wrist lock by AJ, countered into a headlock by Daniels, AJ recountering. Later we get a nice leg takedown into a headlock by Daniels. I liked the sequence, you know, that they do for the beginning. And they kind of go back to a lot of, like, the arm work throughout the match. One thing that I did not care for is, like, there was very, very little selling of any, like, arm pain or anything having to do with that work.
I think they were focusing more on the story of they know each other so well. So it had to look like they had the answer for each other the whole way.
Yeah.
So they kind of foregone one to fulfill the other.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know, you see, like, wrestling sequences in, like, the very best matches, like the Flair and Steamboat, where they do this kind of thing. But I think just the arm selling really makes that mean more, and it makes those holds more interesting because you know, oh, okay, the pain is being inflicted. You can see it rather than just kind of assuming it, you know? And I get your point as well. And I obviously, there's a limited amount of what you can convey in a wrestling match and things that you're focusing on. And I get that the more modern X Division style really focuses less on that kind of selling and more on, you know, big high spots and quick action and that sort of thing. And I think, and the selling is sacrificed to a certain extent, but I just kind of, I noticed that, like even if they'd done a little bit of it, I think it would have made a difference to me.
I also think that considering this felt a little less like an X Division match and a bit more like your typical heavyweight match, they're okay. Both smarter wrestlers. Now they didn't take as much risks as it would feel like for the X Division.
Sure.
Like the more exciting matches were lower, while this one I'm not saying this one was bad, I'm just saying it wasn't as exciting considering jumps and whatnot.
Sure.
From that standpoint, perhaps a little more could have added to it. It shows consequence, and I think it's important to show consequence, because then otherwise, why are you wrestling?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, every hold should have some sort of, like, a reason for it being done, you know? And if you're just doing holds that, right, it's a good way of putting it, the consequence of those holds. So, I'm not a fan of dueling chants, and there were a lot of dueling chants in this match, which get on my nerves, because I kind of think it's like the crowd just, you know, goofing off rather than paying attention to the story of the match. But I will admit that I was mildly amused when they had the chant of wrestling, yay, Hulk Hogan, boo. Like, Like it was there briefly enough where I'm like, okay, I sort of enjoyed that, but for the most part, I'm not really into the dueling chant as a comment on the goodness or badness of the in-ring action. I'm more into a crowd that's into like the story of the match, you know, rooting for one guy or against one guy, or being excited about a fancy move or that kind of, or, you know, like a big damaging move or that kind of thing.
Well, with the big problem with this X Division pay-per-view, I guess the whole thing more than just this match was that a lot of it was, we're X Division guys, so we're going to wrestle, rather than, I hate you, you hate me, punch.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I mean, there not like there was a heel here or a babyface. So it is. I mean, I guess Daniels was kind of playing the subtle heel throughout, but you know, because I don't know, were they already teasing that he might turn on Styles, or was that kind of after this match?
I feel like the turning heel on Styles thing was more of a consequence of the match.
Okay.
Because a big thing going into it was, who's the best X Division wrestler?
Sure.
Whereas you had Daniels, who I think he was the one with the longest reign.
Yeah, I believe that's correct. Yeah, I believe you're right.
And then you have Styles, who held it the most times, now with Jay Lethal, but also not important.
Yeah.
So they were wrestling for this time, and their feuds are kind of like Elmer Fudd and Bugs Bunny. You know who's going to win this.
Right.
Styles really doesn't lose their feuds.
Okay.
And this would be another thing of, oh, AJ wins again. And I guess Daniel started getting frustrated with that.
Sure. Well, yeah,
that
makes
usually
sense.
How it goes with him.
Yeah, that okay. Yeah, I have not. I mean, I've seen a few of their matches, but I'm not well versed in their history. You know, I know the basics, but you know, I haven't seen all those things, so I wasn't. But it makes sense. I mean, there's always. It's interesting how in wrestling, these stories will kind of play out the same way often. Like, I feel like, you know, Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage pretty much always played out with Hulk Hogan winning in the end, even whether it was a good guy or a bad guy. It was going to be like, okay, they were going to face off, and then Savage was going to get the short end of the stick pretty much every time. They would kind of do it in different ways, but that's kind of whatever their dynamic was. And for the most part, with Austin and The Rock, Austin would pretty much, you know, get the upper hand and would pretty much win. Now Rock won the final match, but you know, every other time it was pretty much Austin. So yeah, there are. It's funny how, you know, how that will happen. You know, a lot of times there'll be feuds that, if you look at them over time and in every single instance, you know, especially with feuds where they, you know, they get together every couple of years or even, you know, after five years or whatever, you'll see how that will, it'll end up playing out the same way every time.
Right. And like they had a small feud in 2009, and then there was the feud in 2005, the big one. Mm-hmm. And it kind of all plays out the same way, whether depending on how, like, the only thing that changes is how malicious Daniels is in his approach. But Basically, he has Styles is more the golden child of the division.
Sure.
Whereas Daniels kind of puts in the work, but he doesn't feel that he's getting adequate attention for it. He doesn't feel like he's being treated the way he should. And it sort of plays out that he's jealous of Styles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that obviously works with the story that they're telling. There were a few things that I thought were interesting as far as, like, early on when they each tease a dive, but they kind of, like, out-clever each other, you know, like they keep, like, avoiding each other's stuff, and I thought that was pretty cool.
I've noted how they seem to get sort of malicious towards each other. At one point in the match, Styles went for the Angel's Wings, which is one of Daniel's finishers.
Right.
And to pin your best friend off his own finisher, that seems more like spitting on him than a friendly competition.
Exactly. There was some more viciousness, although it wasn't like there was necessarily a point in the match where one of the guys got pissed and they started kind of getting more fierce. Like, you kind of see that in certain babyface matches, and you didn't really get that. You just kind of got them, I guess, as they were working more toward the big moves.
Right. It just seemed like not to the point of desperation where they did something like, put a chair to Styles' neck and say he was going to kill him on live television.
Right.
But just little things where it seemed a bit more than just, okay, we're doing this for the sport of it. We're going to see who's better.
Sure.
It seemed like they needed to know who was better at times. Like, they needed that kind of affirmation, no matter what, but they did go the extra bit.
Exactly. Yeah. So, we have, I like Styles busting out a fancy Japanese arm drag. We get some more dueling chants. He works the arm for a while. There's some leapfrogs and Daniels bails from the ring. He avoids the high flying stuff, but Styles gets some drop kicks for two. And then we get Daniels working, get some shoulder thrusts in the corner, but then AJ counters a charge in the corner, gets the head scissors, and then kind of goes back to the arm. So there's a lot of you know, a few sequences of moves, and they go back to the arm. And then Daniels, I guess, either tries to get a Boston Crab or a Styles Clash, and then AJ bails to the floor. And then Daniels follows with a dive, which is like the first time someone's able to hit kind of a big move. And then he runs back into the ring and then immediately follows it with a bigger dive, which I thought was pretty cool. And we're roughly 10 minutes in, and then Daniels gets three backdrop suplexes. And really the first time that anyone has like a sustained advantage in the match. It kind of was back and forth before then.
I think it's needed to change it up. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, even if the ending is kind of something we already know,
right,
it has to look like Daniels has a chance. Sure. Especially if we're trying to see who's the better man. There has to be an actual argument for who's the better man.
Right. I mean, it's the whole thing is that, you know, maybe it's AJ, maybe it's AJ's story, him overcoming the odds, but Daniels needs to look strong for him to have odds to overcome.
AJ has always been someone who's been a bit of a odds to overcome kind of guy.
Yeah. And
Daniels is bigger. Daniels has the more sinister look.
Sure. So then we kind of have Daniels sort of working over the neck a bit. Hits a lot of like clubbing to the neck. It's a modified neck breaker. Some nerve pinch, even a nerve pinch, which is interesting to see in a 2011 match, and a knee to the neck, especially, you know, with not like a, usually you see the nerve pinches with like 450 pound guys. So to find it in the X Division match, I enjoyed that. It wasn't a long nerve pinch. So when they get long, then they get a little boring, but it was a good nerve pinch. I was in favor of it. we have, Daniel's trying a springboard, but AJ pushing him off. And then what I was talking about before, AJ with a body press to the floor, and then it just nails like right into Daniel's back. It was actually, I had it wrong. It was AJ landing on Daniel's back really, really hard. And, then we get AJ gets an armbar submission, but then Daniel's gets the ropes. Daniels is able to get a suplex, or tries a suplex on the apron, but AJ lands it. AJ tries a springboard, but Daniels hits the ropes and Styles spills to the floor. And then Daniels chops him really hard in the back of the neck. So this is kind of what I'm talking about with like the ferocity. I mean, Daniels going after Styles' neck, which I... Did Styles have neck surgery or have neck injury? I know they talked about one of these guys having a... I guess it was Daniels, because I think Daniels had some time off, right?
Not really that I can remember. And the thing with AJ is that it's pretty noted that he doesn't take extended periods of time off.
Okay.
I think throughout all of TNA, the longest he's been out is about a month.
Wow.
Daniels has been in great shape, too.
Sure. Yeah, he's had some absences from TNA. I mean, he was fired for a while or let go or whatever for a while.
Right, and he was back. He was like back in ROH within a week,
right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
And I don't remember him missing any extended periods of time either.
Okay, I know one of them. There was part of the story of the match was that, you know, it was that they had a neck injury and the guy was kind of working it over. But
now that I think about it, AJ, I think earlier in the year in a match with Bully Ray, he went through a table.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Going down and like.
That's right.
And I think it was what led to Daniels coming back, because I remember he jumped off a cage and he was wearing AJ's shirt.
I saw that, that was on Impact. Yeah, that was leading into lockdown, wasn't it? That, I believe, because he replaced him on the team or something. Yeah, that was a good angle. That was a good debut for, I don't know if it was his quite his debut, but it was
re-debut,
exactly. So that was a cool moment. I didn't watch a whole lot of Impact in 2011, but I did watch that, and that was really impressive. So, so we have Daniel's doing more neck work. He tries a sunset flip and then does a drop down, which is countered to a cross face by Daniels, but then AJ gets his feet on the rope. Daniels gets a Death Valley driver for two and sort of shows some frustration when he's not able to get the pin there. But you know, that move always works for John Cena, so why wouldn't it work for Daniels?
It doesn't work for Daniels because Daniels is not a superhero.
He does not have a hustle, loyalty, and respect, apparently, or at least not enough of it. So he
needs to eat his corn.
Yeah.
Look a little bit more Clark Kent-like.
Exactly.
It's AJ's moment. Daniels is bald. He has the Lex Luthor look. It's just not going to happen for him.
Yeah, there you go. So we have AJ sort of with – he's on his knees, but he's able to get some punches to the gut. Trade some chops. We have an Enziguri by AJ. I like the fans here are clapping to encourage both guys. Like the kind of now, okay, this is the kind of cheering where the fans are invested in the match as opposed to the silliness before. So the crowd eventually works its way into my favor anyway, which it's very important for every wrestling crowd to get into my favor. That's very, I know it's a goal of every wrestling crowd to please me. So
they told themselves, today we have to make sure that Jason Mann completely is on our side. This man in Columbus needs to believe in what we're saying.
Exactly, exactly. So then we have sort of it looks like it's a missed thing, although they cover it very well. AJ knocks him down repeatedly with chops. AJ kind of slips on a springboard. And sort of falls down, but then Daniels gets a two and just sort of cut, you know, it's like a nice little cover it up rather than it being something that really ruined the match. It was just, okay, AJ slipped and then Daniels tried for the pin. That was good. So,
and to fast forward a little, it's interesting because when Daniels started his heel turn, it sort of became apparent that it was going that way when they had another match, this time on Impact, and AJ slipped off the ropes on a springboard again, and Daniels quickly went for the cover, and he got the three off of that.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, so they on the outside, AJ or yeah, he blocks the suplex, tries his own, then Daniels gets a neck breaker. They're both slow to get up, and then Daniels goes to the top. AJ catches him and then spins him around for a powerbomb cradle for two. This is the point where Daniels' wrist tape is coming off. And then we have Daniels locking AJ into a neck submission where it sort of looks like he's using the tape for choking, although the announcers don't acknowledge it and no one sells it. So I guess either people just missed it or it's just the tape is there, but it's not being used. Anyway,
I would think it's not being used because
that
just crosses a new territory into I'm trying to actually hurt you really badly.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree with that. And then kind of a cool thing where AJ picks him up and then dumps him over the ropes to break out of it. That was a cool way to break out of that move. Then we have Daniels getting a palm strike on the ropes, slamming as AJ's going to the top. Then he slams him off the top into a pin, gets two, completely takes tape off of his wrists. And then fast forwarding a little bit, we have AJ trying a Styles Clash, but then Daniels countering. Then AJ trying for the Angel's Wings and they roll through. And then Daniels getting an STO takedown for two. Styles punches him a bit, then hits his own rock bottom, and then I guess he follows with a moonsault, and then hits the boot, and then a Styles Clash by Daniels only gets two, and then Then AJ tries a fancy springboard splash but hits the knees. Daniels gets the angel's wings again for two, dropping repeated elbows and then seemingly frustrated. And then Daniels goes to the top and AJ crotches him, gets a suplex attempt from the second rope. Daniels tries an angel's wings but from the second rope, but then AJ backdrops him off and then does the spiral tap, which you mentioned.
Right.
The twisting press off the top, and then that it finishes the match. And they mention that is the Borash mentions that's the move that he first won the X Division title with.
It was his old finisher, and
okay.
it was more used when Styles was the X Division guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also a big part of this whole bring back the X Division idea. You bring back the X Division, you bring back the Styles Daniels feud, you bring back the spiral tap. It just made sense that they'd add it. It's almost a nostalgia thing.
Right. Yeah, this kind of almost feels like this is sort of the same thing for the X Division, obviously on a much smaller scale than the One Night Stand 2005 thing was for ECW. It's just sort of like, okay, one night we're bringing back what was great about that, but then it really didn't. I mean, the X Division isn't really much more prominently featured in TNA now than it was before this, right? Or are they emphasizing it a little bit more?
Further than where it was?
Or is it about the same level than what it was, or are they pushing it more, or not that much more anyway?
I'd say they're pushing it more, but not anything to be excited about.
Okay.
I see Austin Aries on a regular basis.
Yeah.
He's the current champion.
Right.
And they've had matches for number one contendership. There was a best of three series between Anthony Nice and Zima Ion. It's hard to keep the name straight.
Sure. It's better than it was, but it's obviously not what it was in 2005.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. But it definitely, you know, but as far as like having the old guys and putting them like in the roles they had in 2005, it's kind of that same thing. It's like, okay, it's this nostalgia thing for, you know, what was great once, and maybe it's going to be part of our show. Even ECW was a little bit like that because they kind of added the ECW elements and of course brought back ECW later. But it's not like we're returning to it. It's more of a look back almost.
And it's kind of strange that you'd say that, because whereas AJ and Daniels kind of feel like it's going back to where it was, mm-hmm. in other parts it doesn't actually feel the same way.
Okay.
Like with Joe opening the show and he lost to Kazarian. If I remember correctly, it was like a slip up. And it just didn't feel like who Joe was back then.
Right.
And then you had Low Ki, who was also in that first X Division title match.
Right.
And he was competing for a contract. So you have this man who's actually a pioneer of the division, and he's trying to get back in.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, Jerry Lynn was there, and that's about where Jerry Lynn should have been. It's Rob Van Dam.
Sure.
That feels pretty big to me, and Jerry Lynn was also one of the pioneers of the X Division.
Right. Yeah. I watched a little bit of TNA at the beginning, and I've watched it here and there throughout the years, but one of the – I remember being excited about TNA because of Daniels and Loki, because I went to the first ROH show in 2002 and saw the main event of Loki and Brian Danielson and Christopher Daniels.
Right. Yeah,
three-way. So that was really exciting, fun. A lot of stiff kicks, a lot of really good action, a lot of just fantastic stuff. I think it's still a great match that holds up. But, it was kind of, I was excited about the X Division at first because, like I said, I was such a huge fan of the cruiserweights in WCW in the, mid to late 90s. And it kind of felt like an extension of that, but I don't know. It never really held the same sort of, I think that style just evolved in a way that it just became less special and, and less interesting to me. And it may be just because I became older and was less interested in flashy stuff and more interested in other things in wrestling, or, you know, I'm not exactly sure what it is. And of course, the best of the X Division matches I love and are fantastic and are fun and, you know, and so forth. But that style of wrestling holds us appeal. It's held us appeal to me for a few years, and as I've gotten older. But at the time when it first started, it was a really exciting thing, and you know, and I was definitely really into it.
I think for me, the X Division might be what the WCW cruiserweights were to you.
Yeah.
Considering I did not go into the 2000 years over 10, so
right.
The WCW cruiserweights are not fresh in my memory or anything.
Yeah.
Whereas you had the X Division athletes, which were so different than anything that was really going on in the major companies. Guys like Petey Williams, I love Petey Williams, and Chris Sabin and Alex Shelley, who are still together and they're still wrestling for TNA.
Yeah.
But I might be in the minority in this, but I would prefer to see them as X Division wrestlers than as the Motor City Machine Guns.
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer to see them as the Motor City Machine Guns in the TNA climate of today, but if I could have had the X Division the way it was and have Chris Sabin and Alex Shelley in those roles again,
mm-hmm.
I would adore it.
Yeah.
And then there's guys like Jay Lethal, guys like Sanjay Dutt. It meant a lot to me. And for them to get Destination X more like Destination X should be,
mm-hmm.
Because if you compared this Destination X to the last Destination X really didn't feel like an X Division pay-per-view.
Right.
It just was it by name.
Okay. So was Destination X traditionally an X Division pay-per-view?
Yes. It always had the idea that Destination X was when the X Division was given more of a time to shine.
Okay.
And Ultimate X matches had more of... mostly happened there.
Okay.
I believe there was an Ultimate X match at this Destination X.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was Alex Shelley, Amazing Red, Robbie E, and Shannon Moore for the number one contendership.
Okay.
Yep. So,
I think I'm remembering the match now. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, this is a fun match. It lacked a little bit, I think, for me, just the issues with the selling, which, you know, we talked about, are keep it from being an essential, but it's definitely fun. I enjoyed it. If you're really into this, if you're really a big fan, have been a big fan of the X Division for years, like you have, Alex, I can see it really being something that kind of capped off kind of a cool era and a cool story and all of that.
For me, it was a good flashback, but for Styles and Daniels, it's just reinventing the wheel. It's not going to be an essential match for anyone, but it was good to see it in this day and age, and it was good to see Daniels go from the guy who was let go and who lost to Sean Morley. He went from that and main event in a pay-per-view, where I kind of feel that he belongs up there. I think Daniels is one of the better wrestlers on the TNA roster.
Uh-huh.
And then you have AJ Styles, who kind of, it feels like every time he goes to the top, they find a way to push him back down.
Uh-huh.
Whether it was being Christian and Kurt Angle's lackey at one point, or the whole thing with Fortune, where he was kind of playing second banana to whatever it was Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan were doing.
Sure.
And it just felt like in 2011, the cream had finally risen to the top, and I felt good about it.
Well, good.
I liked it.
Good. Well, Alex, why don't you tell everyone, why don't you plug whatever you would like to plug, let us know what you're doing on the internet regarding wrestling or anything else you want to talk about?
Okay, I talk wrestling on Twitter every time there's a wrestling something going on, or if I had just gotten a DVD, I'll talk wrestling. It's at Failraiser. I also reblog pictures on Tumblr, also Failraiser. You guys can find me there. If you talk to me enough, I will follow you back. I won't follow you back if you don't talk to me. I don't do the whole team follow back thing, but if you're worth the follow, I'll follow you back.
I'm the same way with Twitter. I feel like I want to know you pretty well before I determine, okay, I'm going to follow you. Or if you're someone whose work I know really well, then I'm fine with that too. But yeah, so yeah, I'm not really into the automatic follow back type thing. I'm a busy person, so.
Right, and if your tweets don't interest me, I really don't want them on my timeline.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I'm an easy follow back as long as we've talked a little or you post things that I like.
Yeah. So if you're nice and you're reasonably smart and you want to talk about good wrestling, then you probably are going to be followed by.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Good. Okay. Well, very well then. Thanks for talking about this match with me.
No problem.
Definitely enjoyed having you on the show. I know we're going to have you on again pretty soon, so that'll be good.
Okay.
And thanks, everyone, again for listening, and we will see you later.
Good night, guys.